guys, what's going on? You're listening to yet another episode of Beyond the Gauntlet, recorded semi-live from Space and Time, right here at 14 Mill Street in Orangeville, Ontario. I am your many hosts. I guess I'm more than one person today. I'm Mike Dodd, and I'm that guy that buys everything that's on the shelf, as today we're talking about speculation, and basically the broken comic book collecting market, and how it's insane. But I'm joined by the owner, the proprietor, the guy who
runs the show here at the Gauntlet, Chris Peddle. And you know what? The funny thing is, Jamie, and I know you're next on the introduction list, I heard on the news last week that this issue, this 3D issue of Batman is going to be worth a astronomical amount of money. And I should rush to the store right now and buy this because, by God, I'll be able to sell this and fund 18 children's educations with this in 20 years from now.
You're buying drugs. We know it. And I am Jamie, the rare 10.0 CGC graded human McBurney.
Well, I guess that just leaves me. I'm Jeff DeHaan. If you want to shoot us a tweet on, well, obviously Twitter, you can do so at Gauntlet Podcast. We'll be your friend forever. Unless, of course, you tweet something negative, in which case we'll never speak to you again.
But we do accept criticism.
of course we do.
Speaking of interaction, yes. We have the, and this is actually perfectly tied in to the topic this week. We have some more of our old wizards here with some more quotations and quizzes to quixotically confound you with. Just let that ride.
And last episode, we poked a quandary out, and we would like to know what the actual answer to this question
so
was.
So the question we had asked for the listening public was: the Vision was created by A. Hank Pym, B. MODOK, C. Ultron, or D. General Electric. Chris, who made the Vision?
Ultron.
Ultron.
It was, yep. Ultron, as his end, he was trying to mess with the Avengers, and that ties into Avengers 2 coming out.
I actually discovered that recently, reading your copy of Age of Ultron.
That's what I'm
saying.
I didn't
realize Ultron was, or Vision was created by Ultron. So.
We can learn lots. And before we dig into the hoary price guide at the back of the wizard, we have 10 more questions to test our collective comic knowledge might. And we begin with some Wolverine. When Wolverine battled Wendigo, the giant blue Sasquatch character, the second time around, who actually ended up defeating the cannibalistic creature? Was it Snowbird, Guardian, Storm, or Alpha Flight?
Alpha Flight.
Saying Alpha Flight, the Canadian roots?
Well,
yep.
I mean,
Canadian
technically
the
first two people on there are members of Alpha Flight, so I'm going to say Guardian.
I think it was Storm.
It was Storm.
Ball. Wow.
I remember lightning bolts and thunderbolts and lightning.
Oh, wait. Hold on. I've misread. It was Snowbird.
Oh.
It was Snowbird of
We're
Alpha Flight.
We're all losers.
We're all. I can't even read, so it's going to be a great day. So get ready for some more misspeaking. The Hunchback weapons designer who used to help Batman design useful gadgets, didn't even know this, was named A. Igor. Was it that on the nose? B. Harold. C. Jerome. Or D. Modo.
Was it Jerome?
I believe it was Jerome,
Jerome,
I think.
I want to say Jerome as well. I remember this.
I remember reading up
this
on
this is apparently Harold. Harold. Hunchback Harold.
Yeah.
That seems a little jerky of Batman.
I know vaguely,
Of
the character, but not enough to really get his name.
And now we have some Avengers trivia. Mockingbird, West Coast Avengers, Hawkeye's once wife. Who killed Mockingbird? Was it Mephisto? Satanus? Master Pandemonium. Well, now I've totally got my DJ name now. And D, of course, Boo Radley, which is pretty ironic when you think about it.
Was killed it Satanus?
The Mockingbird. Who was it? Who killed Mockingbird? Mephisto, Satanus, Master Pandemonium, or Boo Radley?
Just going to go with the big one. I'll say Mephisto.
Mephisto, the wrecker of marriages and apparently
exactly,
killer
see?
Of Mockingbirds.
He's
there
two
we go.
For two.
He's more than that. He's... Man, Infinity Gauntlet alone. Which of the following characters has five fingers on each hand? Nightcrawler, Longshot, The Thing, or oft-forgotten member of the 80s Guardians of the Galaxy, Charlie 27?
Longshot?
Charlie 27.
I'm pretty sure it's Charlie 27 as well. It is. Longshot has four.
Man, I'm just
Longshot's from
tonight.
The Mojoverse, and he was a clone. So his whole
damn you, Mojo.
In his battle, you guys should know this without even having to read the multiple choice. But now, having said that, you're cursed.
Jaws.
In the battle with Venom in Web of Spider-Man number one, Spidey defeated the creature with the help of
a bell.
Church bell.
Church bell. Excellent. What was Man-Thing's real name?
Mr. Thing?
Mr. Thing. Doug Mann. Ted Salas. Alec Holland. Nell Carter. Facts of Life. Or John Walker. What are we going with?
I didn't even hear the first couple.
Ted Salas, Alec Holland, Nell Carter, or John Walker?
I think it was Alec Holland.
I was going to say the same thing. I'm just going to randomly go with
Alec Holland was the Swamp Thing.
Oh!
The Man Thing, the DC, or the Marvel version, was Ted Salas.
This thing, that thing, whatever.
Whatever. Things, two more, and then we're going to give you the ones for the listening audience. Dr. Doom and Reed Richards knew each other from?
College.
Yes. Thank you. In which comic did Firestar of the New Warriors make her debut?
Was it
Amazing Spider-Man?
Was it New Warriors number one, Marvel Action Universe number one, Uncanny X-Men 193, or Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends number one?
Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Yep. Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Little known fact.
Created exclusively for the show?
Exclusively for the television
That's
show.
That's what I was going to say.
Along with Aunt May's dog, which was named... Aunt May's dog?
Spud McKenzie.
that was right decade.
Poochie?
It was Miss... God, he was like Miss Muffin or something. Oh. Well, I've got to look that up.
Somebody must
know. There's your listener question. Okay, listener question. Is in Frank Miller's The Dark Knight Returns, which Batman villain is killed? Is it A, Two-Face, B, Bane, C, Catwoman, or D, the Joker?
Oh, I know that one. That's easy. Wow.
I got to throw them. What? Got to throw them a bone.
No.
Okay, fine. And you also have to get this one. Which of the following characters does not have white sideburns? This is a mutton chop question for me.
We'll call this one a bonus because as easy as it is for me, I'm a big Bat fan. And if you haven't read it, you're just guessing with that one. So you know what?
All right. So here's the bonus.
Yeah.
You can get two. Which of the following characters does not have white sideburns? Doctor Strange, Reed Richards, Nick Fury, again, the 94 version, or Baron Strucker? And we will leave it at that. And Chris, what happens
if you were tuning in last week's episode, you should probably know that answer as we talked about almost every one of those characters.
Continuity. Chris, what happens if they know this information?
Well, if they come into my store over the next week next 2 weeks, because we're going to be off a week. So over the next 2 weeks, with the answer to that question, either one of those questions, they will get a special something for coming in and doing that. It may be a tax-free sale. It may be something. It depends on what I'm thinking.
High five.
I will reward you with some sort of store kickback if you come in and give me the answer to that question. Because I want to know. I don't know the answer.
Now we need to know. It's more of a public service, really, than anything.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Now, gentlemen, I have a question for you. Are you ready to delve in to this the hive of scum and villainy that is the speculators market? Did you know that in 1994, March 1994, Avengers number one was a hot book? And would get you $1,675.
Good God, I better go buy them all.
If you can find them, go for it. Did you also know that Batman 100 was worth $1,100? And Batman The Dark Knight Returns number one? Jeff, how much do you think that was worth in 1994 dollars?
It's like I'm on the prices right here.
What do you think? Yeah.
I'm going to say, okay, so 1994, that wouldn't have been that long after it came out. But it was a pretty hot book. I'm going to say $901.
Chris, would you like to be the guy who just has $1 and then wins the
showcase?
No.
I was
going to say $902.
I was going to say it's worth $25.
It's worth $25 because Chris can look down.
No. I just know what the book is worth today. It's worth about the same.
It's worth about $25. And it's interesting. It hasn't changed. And for those curious where I am pulling these numbers out of, besides directly from my butt, this is from, again, your friend and mine in 1994, Wizard Magazine, which used to be this 200-page tome that you would read every month as a comic nerd, and the last 50 or 60 pages was the Wizard Price Guide.
Like,
and
it was
this was important.
It was a magazine that had a spine. Like, it didn't have staples because it was thick enough that it was just all glued together, and it was...
And you could find out. You could find out that Bartman number one, if you remember Bartman number one, which apparently versus Mrs. Krabappel and had a silver foil cover, would be worth $2.95. And this was important information.
What would it be worth without the silver foil cover?
Apparently, there was no other option. Did you know that Barbie Fashion number one, bagged with card, is worth $3? So we could go on about this forever. But the whole thing is, a big thing that Wizard Magazine and... ask you guys this as well. A big thing that Wizard Magazine was involved in was the idea of comics as this investment. Mm-hmm. And I remember really clearly growing up when I was maybe 14 or 15, Superman 75 came out, the Death of Superman issue. And it was in a black poly bag that you did not open under no circumstances. Inside had the issue. With the black armband and all this other thing. And I remember people buying... My own sister bought... She was a huge Superman fan. She bought two copies.
One to read
and one to never touch. Yeah. And do you know how much that investment is worth in 2013?
Chris, $50?
Chris, how much would a bagged...
Now, that's a trick question. Is that how much I would pay you for
that it?
How much I would sell it for?
Ooh, let's say, how much would you sell it for?
The last time I had that copy in stock, which was about 3 months ago, I sold it for $25.
$25. Reasonable.
It was sealed in the bag, popping fresh.
Now, if I had asked you, how much would you expect when you bought that? You know, fresh out of the store, you've just left and you've talked about this wonderful comic that you bought. What do you think the average person would expect to get on their investment?
20 years later.
Yeah, honestly, I expected that number to be higher.
Yeah.
I really did. Like, because the Death of Superman was the first, like, comic book story that I ever heard in mainstream media. Like, I knew about comics and everything, don't get me wrong, but, like, I remember, like, you know, my parents were watching, like, Entertainment Tonight or something, and there was an actual story on the death of Superman and how big of a deal it was. So you'd think, with all the hoopla of that 20 years ago, that it would be worth more now. And it's an interesting thing. During a hunt in some back issues several years ago on a dollar comic day or whatever, I actually found a polybagged Superman, not Death of. It might have been when he came back because it was the white polybag.
Yeah.
The Return of's only worth
I still money. Haven't opened it. And I'm well aware that it's not going to be worth anything.
Of course you haven't.
But out of sheer principle, it's like, because you know what? If I open it, it can't be resealed.
You know, so you think there's a heat gun for that.
All right. So here's the big thing when it comes to collecting comic books. All right. And I'll let people in on a little secret. Comic books work much on the same principle as anything else in this economic system.
Like
supply
sports
cards? And demand. Okay. The reason why comic books from the 40s and 50s and 60s and whatnot are worth the money that they are worth is because back in that era, bags and boards didn't exist. Okay, people bought comic books for the love of comic books. People bought comic books to trade with their friends, to roll up in their back pocket and carry them to school. They got them to fill out the ads in the
to
back.
To order their X-ray glasses.
To get their X-ray glasses.
That grid ain't going to sell itself.
You know, to rip off the back cover and use it to order their next 12-issue year subscription. So when it all came down to it, the collectors of the comic books in that era bought comic books to enjoy the comic books for what they were. Fantastic stories in a panel-by-panel form. And here's the thing. Somewhere in the 70s, people started going, well, this issue's harder to find. I can charge more for it. And the comic bag and board was created. Okay, and when this happened, the comic industry took a nosedive in the fact that suddenly everybody and their uncle was like, oh, when we buy a comic, we now got to put it in this bag and this board, and we got to keep it for eternity. and we're not allowed to read our comic books anymore.
Because it's worth something.
Because it's worth something. And the moment that happened, that is the moment that they began being worth not much of anything. Because suddenly everybody had them.
Ironic.
Okay. A phrase that my wife uses a lot for various things is when you hold on to something, you want to treat it like wet soap. Because if you hold on, if you don't hold on to it at all, it falls. Yeah. But if you hold on to something too tightly, it slips right out of your hands. And yeah, that's kind
that's of a really good analogy. I like that.
And that's kind of the way this is that it's like, you know, suddenly they brought out these bags and boards because they had to protect their investment, which made their investment worthless.
Well, it's not entirely worthless. But like I said, it's based off supply and demand.
Exactly.
If an issue of a comic book comes out tomorrow and only 25 copies of this comic book are made, well, that comic book 10 years from now will be worth something because there's only 25 copies of it. Okay.
But
if you are in the 90s where everything was overproduced
and neon
or foil or whatever,
or holographic,
embossed,
or just boss,
and they were milking number one issues like they were going out of style.
And there was like 15 different variants.
Exactly.
Don't forget the zeros and half issues.
Exactly. Zeros and half. Hey, we're all coming back to this, aren't we? I seem to notice that this is happening again.
It's all coming back
anyway,
to me
but
now.
When that happened, the comic industry started overproducing things. Mm-hmm. And so people who collected in the 90s from 91 through 99 until the comic industry started to implode upon itself, the stuff from that era is just not worth much of anything. Just because there's so much of it out there. Yeah. If I had a dollar for every time someone came into my store and tried to sell me a Wildcats or Spawn number one, I could pay all my bills off. I really could. It happens.
That's amazing.
It happens like 3-4 times a week.
And
somebody comes in with a collection going, I have a bunch of comics. I only have got maybe 30 of them. You know, what era are they from? Oh, the 90s. Not interested.
Like, looking at a show like, say, Comic Book Men, how many times has somebody strolled through there with an X-Men number one? Meaning, like, the Jim Lee 90s X-Men, not, like, way back.
The one that literally everybody bought 5 copies of.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Exactly. Well, because there was 5 different copies.
Yeah, exactly, and you had to put them together to see the giant picture.
And you got to see the big picture.
And
exactly.
It's really interesting if you... Because I found there was an upswing... Because I started really being a huge comic nerd in like the early 90s, and I would go to a comic shop then, and they would have, you know, the books that just came out, but they'd also have on the wall your bags and boards with your like rare, you know, Youngblood number one, $10, whatever. And in the, like as Chris was saying, in the 90s that died out, and that was when you started to see books like The Walking Dead, which number one is you were saying like $2,000 or something.
Yeah,
at this
it was
point,
underprinted
right?
though, and it was Image Comics,
but
a very
dry
run of it.
At the same time, it was like a small release of a book that people were interested by and had potential, and that's what drives value up.
But the only reason why it's worth the $2,000, to be honest with you, is the television show.
Yeah, and it's right. rare. And
it
it's
was
got that.
It was worth maybe $50, and then the television show came out, and suddenly now it's worth $2,000 because everybody who wasn't into the comics now got into the comics.
My favorite thing, and going back to last week's episode about S.H.I.E.L.D., it's really fascinating because I go to Bleeding Cool as one of the comic book sites that I often check in on, and they love doing this. When they have a character on that show, they always immediately the day after are like, hey, prices for Avengers number 260 whatever, you know, the first appearance of Graviton, prices are going up. I'm like, nobody cares.
Actually,
stop doing this.
No, they do, though. That's the thing, and I see it all the time. When I guarantee you, when the Thor movie comes out next week, congratulations, Thor comics are going to go up in value for about a month period.
Yeah.
And it happens.
Yeah.
Okay, and I know it's ridiculous because what's going to happen is you're going to get these people that are going to go see Thor, and they're going to come out of that theater pumped because they just saw Thor, and then they're going to go, I want to relive some Thor, so I'm going to go to my store, local comic shop, and I'm going to buy Thor.
I'm going to go to my store and get some Thor. I need some more.
Exactly.
That's got to be like a
I need some
for the
more
store.
Thor galore from the store.
Score! no
but it's
more.
True. It happens, and you know, I as a comic shop owner do monitor the trends in the comic books, and it happens.
Yeah, and it's That's sort of understandable. I think that the weird connection and the part that I don't necessarily get is how do you go from, you know, I like this comic or I like this movie, I want to read more of the comic. How do you go from that to suddenly it's worth more? Like for me, when I read a comic, you know, I never care about how much it goes for in the secondary market. I'm like, this is an issue of a comic that I want to read and I want to read again. So I've got a copy of it.
Again, it works with supply and demand, Jamie.
Yeah.
Okay. You take into account if gas becomes more scarce, people will pay more for it.
Or if they just find
if they come up with some reason that gas is in the news for some reason, gas prices go up. It's the same reason. All the people that control the pricings of this thing, which unfortunately to say is comic shops, when it boils down to it, when we go, oh, there's going to be a sudden increase in hype, sales tactic wise every company on the planet does this,
right,
where they will now increase the price of this product because they know they can get more for it because the demand is there for it.
But I think for me, it's not like I don't think it's more of a comic shop issue. I see it more as like as a consumer myself, that sort of mentality. You know, what type of person owns an issue of a comic book and then turns it around for profit? That has to be, A, the most impossible to sustain financial activity that one could do. And B, why don't you just read the comics? Like, average fan,
This is the funny thing, and I have both types of people that come to my store. I have the people who collect comics because they enjoy reading the comics, they enjoy the stories, they enjoy the art, they enjoy whatever it is that gives them the thrill experiencing a comic book.
Yep.
Okay. But then I got the people that come in and go, ooh, issue number one came out. I better pick this up because in 20 years from now, this is going to be worth money. And they'll never read the comic book.
That's
sad. And there it is.
They'll just put it in a bag and board and stick it in a box and it'll collect dust for eternity
It shows up in a dollar bin.
And that's the thing, until they're sadly mistaken when they walk in with their box of 200 number one issues and go to a comic shop, how much will you give me for it? And the comic shop goes,
how much will you give me?
Yes, exactly.
Maybe you should go ask Rob Liefeld how much he'll give you for it.
Yes.
No, wait. He died in a car crash inking another book while he was driving.
Yeah. But when it all boils down to it, when the popularity of something increases, then the price of those things increases because people are more willing to pay for that excitement.
Yeah, fair enough. And I guess that With anything, there's always going to be a certain type of person who is in it for the financial element as well as the actual enjoyment of it.
Yeah.
And now, I think for a lot of us, it's hard to understand that. Like, I think for most of us, we consume comic culture and nerd stuff because we enjoy it and not so much. And I mean, that's sort of, for me, it's always been this like sort of it's like been under the rock, and occasionally I'll lift up the rock and just like look and be like, wow, look at those things squirm, and then I'll put the rock back down and be like, I enjoy comics again.
And the rock says, don't pick me up like that.
And the thing is, when it all boils down to it, okay, there, for example, if you wanted to relive the very first issue of Daredevil that ever came out, and you didn't want to spend the $4,800 that it's quote unquote worth at a 9 point whatever in the comic price guide, you could find it in graphic novel form as a fan.
By a trade.
Okay,
yeah.
And if you're into it just for the art and the story, you don't care whether you have it in its original form, sealed in a CGC casing, or you just picked it up in a graphic novel and experienced it that way.
Yeah.
You wanted to just enjoy the issue, see the art, read the story. Okay, so there is the other option. However, there are the collectors out there that are, I have to have this.
I'm
a Daredevil freak. I have a costume. I have the original costume that Ben Affleck wore in the Daredevil movie.
Please buy it from me. The stench of failure is corrupting my house.
Exactly. I've got my room is decked out in a Daredevil shrine. I have to have Daredevil non-CGC'd at a 9.7 encased in plastic.
And just for people at home, what's CGC, Chris?
CGC is the comic book grading company that actually you can send a comic book to. It costs anywhere from $25 to $45, depending on the era of the comic book you're sending. They will take your comic book, and they will have a group of experts review the comic book and basically grade it on a scale of 1 to 10 with all the points in between. And the higher to 10 it gets, the better condition it's in. And then, because after that, they encase it in plastic, and there it is trapped for all time. And it also is insured at the same time. And therefore, if your comic book is ever caught in a fire or flood or any other damaging situation, a rabid nerd that just had to read your issue, you can claim it under your insurance as properly insured because it was a collectible.
Hey, Chris, you know what I'm thinking? You should just send in every book of the store, get it graded, and then burn your store down. You'd be a multimillionaire several times over.
Not really, because, you see, it costs $25 to $45 to get a book graded, and 90% of books that would come back would probably only be worth a couple bucks.
Really? Yeah,
see, the monkeys are just throwing darts randomly, so you can never really tell.
Yeah, like now, isn't it true that how they grade is like a really closely guarded secret?
It is, but it's not a very good...
Not in the caramel secret.
They grade it on a scale, and if you pick up like an Overstreet comic price guide, they actually have the breakdown of what the scale is. You know, everything from if this book has a crease on page 4, it's, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Page 6 or whatever. Yeah.
There's a grading system that they do follow, and if you buy an Overstreet comic price guide or just Google search comic grading system.
Which it is really fascinating.
And, you know, and it gets into, like, the conditioning of the ink in the comic book. It gets into any, like, marks on the comic book, the spine intact, the staples intact, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the less red the book looks, the more it is potentially worth.
Beautiful.
That's why you do like Martin, Milhouse, and Bart, and you take tweezers to turn the pages.
You have to score them with a candle.
But as long as it doesn't
break
paper.
To the CGC, do I envision this group of people wearing masks and leather gloves and using like
AIM scientists, basically.
I was thinking the same thing.
Just trying to flip the pages and then grading it? I don't know. Because I've had friends that have actually graded a comic. How accurate is the system? I've actually had friends that have gotten a comic back graded, didn't like the grading on it, opened the package again, sent it back, and came back with a higher rating.
Wow.
So it's
we have a record of this.
We need investigative reporting for this.
Exactly. So a friend of mine who I'm not going to list for reasons that he might not want his name listed.
We'll call him Tim.
Yes, we'll call him Tim. Tim sent away a copy of the first appearance of Punisher in Amazing Spider-Man, number 118.
Nice!
I
thought it was 127.
Sorry.
Oh, you look at me. I'm.
You know more than us.
I'm pretty sure it was in the 20s.
I buy 118. I'm on Chris's side.
Well, we're in the age of smartphones.
I may have just had a brain fart, but whatever.
So, yeah, he sent it away.
He sent it away, and the first time he got it back, it was a 7.2. He had a feeling, based on what he read of the comic grading system, that it was worth more than that. So he opened it up, paid the $25 again, sent it out again. The second time it came back at a 7.7. Then he still thought the grading was off, and then sent it out a third time and had it come back at an 8.6.
Wow.
That is a load of bullshit.
What this feels like is the potential for like a really great Dateline episode.
Oh, sorry. I found it. You're all wrong, although he was closer. It was 129. Amazing Spider-Man 129 in February 1974.
Thank you.
That's
Thank
what
you.
I sound like with my Wikipedia anyway, notes.
The story short there is the thing with the grading system is if you go to a comic price guide website, you may go, okay, the comic graded at an 8.6, not CGC'd, is worth $20.
Yeah.
However, if it is CGC'd, suddenly it's worth $280.
I'm waiting for the time where it's like, well, your comic would have been worth 8.6, but then Frank spilled his coffee on it. So,
sorry!
Little post-it from Frank. Yeah. Mea culpa!
No, but what I'm saying is even the comic grading system is kind of, it all depends on who gets your comic word. That day of the week.
Someone's having a really bad day. 2.5.
Well, that's just really what it is. And
if I see another He-Man comic.
If I see another X-Men number one.
As comic shops came up with another scaling system of fine, very fine, near mint. And again, this is chocolate just us mint. Taking a frigging guess. You know, we're not professionals because even the professionals aren't professionals apparently. So,
well, it's not like there's a course you can take for comic grading, or is there?
Oh, please, I hope not.
No, there probably is by them. It's just, what day of the week is it? You know?
Do you have
if
a
it's a Wednesday
board,
and you are looking at a monkey? Corner, it is just, 2.4.
Just watch this educational video on how to grade comics.
Yes, would you like to know more?
The
thing is, when it comes to grading comics and not grading comics, yes, potentially you can pass them off being worth more if they are graded. Okay? His comic book graded at an 8.6. The 129 Amazing Spider-Man graded is worth $940. Ungraded, it's only worth like 300 and something.
Good. Now, here's the question. Does it matter what that grade is? Like, if it's a grade of like 1.2.
Oh, no,
But people will still buy those books, which is really weird.
Hey, I would. I'd love to have a copy of that. I do, but it's a reprint that came with an action figure.
Love those. What I find really bizarre about that is there are two things that I noticed just from that story. One is, like, I have comic books that I consider myself, like, a fan of, that I want to own the original version of. Like, I love DC's old Ambush Bug miniseries. They're really, really funny, really clever. I mean, I can find them for a buck. No. And I have picked up lots of copies just for a dollar because I'm like, hey, another throw it on the pile. I've got another copy of Ambush Book number one. So I don't know necessarily if there are any books that are that like huge, like that original Punisher issue that I've never had an obsession with a character to that extent.
Yeah.
You know, if I have to pay like more than $20 for, you know, like the first appearance of Star-Lord from Guardians of the Galaxy,
I'm the same way. Like, I have that way back when that Alan Moore collection that we were talking about, includes The Killing Joke.
Yep.
But about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I bought a issue of Killing Joke, like an original Killing Joke. Not even one of the reprints that came out when Dark Knight came out, like an original softcover Killing Joke from Chris. And I have no intention of selling it or grading it or whatever, but it's just as a Batman fan and as a fan of the Killing Joke in general, I wanted to own that book on its own instead of in this Alan Moore collection. And I've never actually read the single issue because I don't really need to.
Yeah, but it's knowing a cool piece of memorabilia to have.
Like when I was going through my long boxes to find some stuff for, you know, quote unquote research for the episodes, I came across it and it's just... Seeing that Joker smile with that camera up to his face, I'm just like, yeah, that's mine.
Well, also, the original coloring of that book is great. DC recolored it, I think. I don't know if it was for the first Alan Moore, but for the second reprinting.
See, now, you're going to notice something when it comes to comics and what they're worth. And this is one thing. If you take old comic books, stuff that came out in the late 50s and 60s when Marvel and DC were coming into fruition, basically.
Right, yeah.
Okay, a lot of those early books, due to the fact that, like I said, back in that era, comics weren't being collected because...
Nobody ever
they
thought
they were collecting
that was
to read
anything.
Them, you know, they were used to help alleviate the pressure of what was going on in the world, so people bought them as an escape. People bought them as the satire that was sometimes in them.
Yeah.
And the reason why when you get into something like Uncanny X-Men number one being worth the money it is, or Amazing Fantasies 15, or et cetera, why they're worth so much money is because they're incredibly hard to find now in pristine condition.
And also, to a certain extent, they're almost historical elements, as we talked about in the very first issue, as Superman, right?
Now,
like, it's a historical thing.
What you're going to also find, though, is all coming through when you start taking your trek through the 70s and the 80s and everything. The comics that are retaining their value are the comic books that were the first appearance of a character.
Yep.
They're going to be the first appearance of a writer or an artist.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
These comics are retaining their value, and the value is increasing.
Mm-hmm.
Or it was the last issue that an artist or writer or character appeared in.
Right.
Okay. So their first appearance or last appearance, and you're going to find that all the in between issues are usually worth nickels and dimes.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, a lot of times, at least with the character standpoint, you're not going to know until long after that first appearance has happened that character
went on to do something.
Example of this is what happened in the 90s is the comic companies just started going, hey, we're going to create new characters, new villains, new heroes, and introduce a dozen new writers this week and a dozen new artists
super pets.
This week, and super pets. And we're going to
Streaky the Super
We're going to have all these characters and stuff. And they milk the industry. And we're going to all give them an issue number issue number one sells better than any other issue. And the comic companies still do that to this day. I don't know how many times we've seen in the past 5 years Marvel restart stuff to issue number one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because they know issue number one sells because everybody's guilty of it. It's a good jump on point for the fanboy.
Yeah, yeah.
Or for the collector, it's that shiny beacon that says, well, you might be worth something.
Nice. And,
the multiple covers
That was the next thing I was going to get.
Now, variant covers are covers are a slightly different ball.
So variant covers, again, are different versions of a cover that you usually get.
Exactly. And how they usually work is a comic store has to order so many regular covers to get
One
variant.
I think the smallest number you can get is a 1 in 10, right?
A 1 in 10. So I would have to order as a store 10 copies of this
to
the
get
normal
one
cover,
of
to
the
get
variants.
One of this cover.
Yeah.
Okay. Now these ones, and it's 1 in 10s, 1 in 25s, 1 in 50s, 1 in 100s, 1 in 500s. And the higher the number is, the less achievable a smaller store has to get this, which means there are less of these out in circulation,
right,
which is why they are worth more money.
But that also means larger stores like, say, Midtown Comics in New York can afford to get them, or stores can pinch them and put them on eBay.
Well, that's just the thing, and that's what goes on with this whole thing is... For example, I don't think that there's many comics that I would order more than 25 copies of.
Right.
Okay. I remember when the Secret Invasion happened, I did chase some covers just to see what would happen, and I ordered 75 to get a 1 in 75. And I still have copies of Secret Invasion that I'm handing out. That one copy that I got, did I make money up to cover, from a store perspective, what I spent on the other 75 issues?
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Right. So it's for a business perspective for me chasing a variant cover. Now, if the guy comes in and says, hey, I'll give you a couple $100 for a 1 in 100 sketch variant of whatever.
Yeah.
It might be worth my time because that $200 might offshoot the fact that I just had to order 100 issues and only sell 12.
What type of person do you think? It sounds sort of negative, but who does the variant appeal to?
The collector.
Like them because sometimes you get some really cool art. Like, for example, Chris, he'll put aside the variants for ponies for me.
Okay.
Because I just think they look cool. Now, I'm looking on eBay right now for prices of comics. I just type in comic books. Most valuable one currently on eBay is $5.1 million. It is a Flash number one, an Ashcan edition, which means it was one that they screwed up on, as far as I understand, graded 9.6, 1939. I found an Amazing Fantasy on there.
Oh, okay. What number? 15?
Fantasy 15. Graded
Spider-Man.
Uh-huh. Graded 7.5, $63,000. Or best offer. and here's
offer 10 bucks.
And here's a weird one. Comic book graded, best magazine set, Playboy, best set of 32 earliest Playboys for $500,000.
Are they all graded?
They are all graded.
And now...
That's the sound of Jeff vomiting and coughing.
What? All I can imagine is getting a crate of graded sealed Playboys.
I don't even know if they're stuck together at all.
It feels like you just look at it and you're like, what am I doing with my life?
There's even an X-Men number one signed by Stan Lee, with signatures can take the value down.
Yeah,
at $46,000.
So here's the funny thing, guys, about signatures. Okay, a signature is a tricky thing because you're hoping that the person signing the comic book, their signature is worth more than the fact that they just wrote on it in pen.
Mm-hmm. Or Sharpie, even worse.
Or Sharpie. Because the moment that pen touches that comic book, on the grading scale, defaced. It is now a defaced blemish.
It doesn't matter if you've got your certificate of authenticity or not.
Yep.
It's still writing.
Exactly.
On the cover.
Which means you're hoping that you get so whatever you do, don't just go get some random person to sign your comic book and hope that it's worth money. But
get Stan Lee before he dies.
Yeah. Now another
trend
that's coming.
Oh man, I just got a really vision of it on his deathbed.
Another trend that's coming is signed comic books are another crazy thing because now a lot of people are complaining that there's signature forgeries out there. Oh, this guy knew how to sign Mark Waid's signature.
How do you know if you had too much time on your hands? You spend time trying to get Mark Waid's signature down.
Well, see, and here's the thing, though. This actually started out because there were people going around doing this. Okay? It's one of those things that, like, when you look at the plastic bag, it says don't put over your head for suffocation purposes. That someone obviously did that somewhere and killed
someone
himself.
Someone ate that little packet in the shoes.
Yeah.
You know, that guy ate the silica gel, you know? So somebody somewhere did this, okay? And that's why now CGC Comics, you have to have part of their signature series to actually prove that the signature is there. You have to have them witness the signature.
It's nuts.
It doesn't matter that you could go and take a picture of Stan Lee signing your comic book and holding it up and your arm around Stan Lee's shoulder and him actually drawing on the page. It
has to be dated, though, so you have to hold up a calendar.
A newspaper, like it's a hostage situation.
It doesn't matter. If they didn't witness it, it never happened. So
that's insane.
Wow.
I would love to have so much free time that I could be that deeply concerned with my comic book collection.
Yeah, like, I mean, all mine are bagged and boarded and in long boxes, but that's for my own benefit.
See, I take them out of the bags, like, and boards, they're easier to get to.
Before,
so I know where they are.
Before I moved somewhere that had real comic shops, because I'm from a small town that I had to scour convenience stores to find my comics, so they didn't sell bags and boards either, so all my comics were kept in empty cereal boxes.
Nice.
That's a really good idea. Actually.
That'll work.
It was
that'll
a decent
work.
Size. For the most part, they stayed
pretty.
Did they
start to smell like Lucky Charms?
I took the bag out after
that
the
takes meeting. Down their grading, Jeff. Jeez.
Yeah, come
no,
on.
They smelled like Count Chocula.
Okay.
No, CGC 9.6 plus pleasant odor.
Actually, I hang them in my car now.
That's your air
cereal air freshener.
Yes.
Man, life with Archie smells great.
But yeah, there's this entire industry where people will forge now signatures on comics, and like to even move this to a different area, there's people selling fake props out there.
Oh yeah,
I'm a Star Wars nut, and I used to have a huge Star Wars collection. I can look at a gun. I can look at Han Solo's DL-44 blaster, and I can tell you what's forged on it. I'm that hardcore into it, like almost as bad as Adam Savage from Mythbusters when he built one that was screen accurate. Because even the ones from Master Replicas were wrong. And that's incredible, considering you pay $200 for a signature edition, which is supposed to be authentic. And that's another thing, too, talking about speculation. Toys, to just touch on that for just a moment. Older comic toys are worth a crap ton now.
Even out of package,
okay,
you can still get a good
amount.
And
here's the funny thing, though, and this is something that I've mentioned to a lot of the people that come in collecting toys here. The toy market is in an interesting state of flux right now. Okay, because what happens with the toy market is the toy market thrives on you were a kid once, you collected these toys.
Yes.
You now gave away your toys for one reason or another when you grew up, and now that you have the disposable income, you want the toys again because they bring back happy thoughts.
It's like, you know, my whole life.
Okay.
Like we're having a real breakthrough here.
But when you're getting the new generation of kids that don't even care about toys, it's all about computers and iPods and Xboxes and PlayStations.
Why have
and
an action
like
figure
that.
And you can have an iPad?
Exactly. What's going to happen when the generation of the toy collectors now that are going after the G.I. Joes and the Transformers and the Ninja Turtles and all the stuff from the 80s and early 90s, when they start dying off and you're left with the next generation that they only wanted their iPhones and their iPods and everything? The toy
get ready
market
for the big
going
Skylander boom.
No. The toy market is going to do something really weird, okay, because of the fact that these expensive toys are in their state right now because of the fact that we've got people who were kids in the 80s and 90s now have the disposable income again to rebuy mm-hmm. their toys. But when they're gone, and all the kids now don't care about toys.
Where's that?
Where's the market going to go? The market's going to have only one way to go, and that's flounder.
I've got to tell you this. One of the greatest
experiences.
Now, there's
always going to be the diehard collector, but yeah. you can have the diehard collector all you want, but
they can't keep the market up
on their
own. They
can't keep the market
right?
up on their own. They need to have the nostalgia junkie as well.
Which my favorite, the weirdest thing, there were a couple, when I was living in Japan, there were a couple sort of like, I guess you'd call them like used bookstores that also mm-hmm. sold like electronics and whatever people cleared out of their house and sold. I found, speaking of toys, I found all of like these rare Star Wars figures from the Power of the Force line
nice.
And like all the old Spawn blue variants and like Black Violator variants and all these things that I remember from a kid. Being like worth, you know, $15 to $20 because they were so rare, they were like a buck.
Oh,
so
Jesus.
All I did for kicks when I had a dollar to spare and was bored was I would go buy like a blue Violator, open it up and be like, wow, I was dumb back in 1994. And then it would immediately break. Because those things are not made to last.
It also sounds like they
would you like to hear a tragic story?
Yes. Okay.
Going
yes.
all the way back to the 90s. I'm going into high school. There's this little-known card game known as Magic the Gathering.
No.
Oh.
But what did Michael pull out of a booster pack one day but a Black Lotus?
No.
But what did Mike do when he decided, oh, this game sucks? Hey, Brad, here you go. Have him.
Get out of town and take a bus.
Shotgun blast to the face of stupidity.
Shall we tell people what the Black Lotus is worth? As a Magic the Gathering card.
Let me
depending
look it up
on the
eBay.
Condition, it's worth between $1,500 and $2,500.
But at that time, back in the 90s, it was worth a shit ton.
Was it worth more?
You bet
actually,
it was.
I think it's even worth more than that now, even. Exactly. I've seen 411 games in Toronto sell one for $4,000.
Let me see. As of the current
time...
Hey,
Brad,
time,
if you're listening, lucky you.
Yeah. Now, here's the sad thing. This was from the beta edition. So this was from the very first couple of booster sets. At current grade 9.5 by the Beckett Company, it is rated at $16,455.99.
So enjoy that new car, Brad.
Yep. Screw you, hippie.
Now you're hoping that Brad didn't do the same thing and give it to Joe and then passed it on.
I know he played with it, so ha!
This is like some sort of really weird, like... VD campaign where it's like if you give this to your friend and your friend and your friend and now you're rich.
But yeah,
so
they're it's just one of those things that with comics you always assume they're gonna be worth something. Same with toys, you always assume they're gonna be worth something. And I think to touch upon toys just one more final time, the kids of today are the ones that are growing up with the toys now. They're not gonna much care for our Transformers from 1980, they're going to care about the more premium collectibles like Hot Toys.
And that seems to be where it's going.
Oh, God, yeah. Like these are like, someone described them as the Rolls Royce of action figures.
Yeah.
I've considered buying a Hawkeye for $250 because it was a damn good deal. Considering he goes for $700.
I got the Bank Robber Joker from Dark Knight.
How much did that set you back?
But when it only $45.
What?
I got it when it first came out, $135.
Oh, my God.
Again, but you're considering these Hot Toys are from a collector standpoint. I'm talking mm-hmm. about a kid. The reason why you enjoy your Star Wars, your Transformers, wherever, is because mom and dad bought you them for your birthday, mm-hmm. for your Christmas gifts, for your whatever yeah. occasion. I don't know about you, but I don't know many parents that are going to go drop $250 to $400
well,
on a Hot Toy to give their kid, knowing that the kid might open it up and play with it.
You want a what?
So well, we're going to go to Walmart.
A high school kid
made
a bottle. That's yeah. a hot toy.
But high school, you're past that point.
Yeah.
In high school, you're already at that point in most cases where you've given up your toys for more other things. I'm talking about a kid that's like 6, 7, 8.
Most
nine.
Cases.
Well,
yeah.
A funny thing is, some toys that are actually worth a lot that people don't think of are like Happy Meal toys.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of those, like if you look, depending on which ones they are, but a lot of those sometimes can be worth a lot if they're in decent condition.
Two things this reminds me of. One was another store in Japan that I loved was the store that only stole Pez dispensers. Only wow. sold Pez dispensers. And they had, and I remember very clearly, my brother was super excited. The one Christmas, I bought him the Pez gun that shoots literally Pez. So think about how you would eat that.
You would give it to your paw.
You would literally be... You would put a gun in your mouth and eat a piece of Pez. But for him, he was really excited to get it. It cost $100. Because it was out of print, it was old. It actually has a clip of Pez.
You know what, though? At the same time, it's amazing. If you have the money to spend on that, like it's not going to, you know, have you break the bank for you necessarily,
yeah.
and you know he's going to appreciate it, then it's worth it.
Exactly. And that's what I think. It's that same sort of thing where it's this market for it. And it was just fascinating to see that same sort of thing. But it also reminds me of this really great article from The Onion where I think the headline was basically antiques dealer going to scream if he has to appraise another goddamn Smurfs plate. Which it's fascinating to see to what extent things are considered valuable because they might be worth money. As opposed to, and I think that's...
And just because it's old doesn't mean it's valuable.
Exactly. And I think that's sort of the main mm-hmm. idea that we're getting at here is this balance between, you know, how is something worth something to you?
Well, what I find funny are the things, and this is kind of the genesis that spawned this episode, the things that are speculated to be worth something. For example, when DC did their Villains Month, before it was even released, the Joker's Daughter issue was apparently going, like, pre-sale, going for, like, not astronomical, like, hundreds necessarily. Chris would have a better idea than me, but at least, like, $50.
$135.
There you go, oh. $135.
Mike, so just out of curiosity, all could right. you look up on eBay Joker's Daughter, all right. What was it, Dark Knight?
Right. I think it was in Dark Knight. 23.3
Just right, so Joker's Daughter 3D
cover. Yeah, course. Joker's Daughter 3D cover would be right. what
I'm deadly curious
is, now. I mean, well, he looks that yeah. up. This is what I tell a lot of my customers that come in and say they want to get into comic books. I always ask them why.
Yes.
Why do you want to get into comic books? If they tell me that they want to get in for the collector's value, I tell them... No, and I tell them, okay, then what you want to do is you want to collect old comic books. You don't want to collect new comic books. If you are going to collect new comic books, you want to chase the high-end variants. You want to collect the 1 in 75s, the 1 in 100 variants. You're going to pay a little bit more for them now, but they're in the long run have the potential of being worth more. You want to go after the CGC stuff right now. You want to go after yeah. the signature series stuff with proven signatures on it. You want to go against, you want to pick up the original art covers that are done on blank covers that are also proven that the artist did these things.
Yeah.
Those are going to be the things that 10, 20, 30 years from now are going to be worth the ridiculous amounts of money.
Yeah.
If you wanted to get into comic books because you enjoy comic books, because you enjoy wanting to read the comic books, you want to see if you'll get into enjoying a character or the story or an artist, then get into them for you.
Yeah.
Okay? You don't necessarily have to bag and board them. You don't necessarily have to do anything. If you want to get an original art cover done, go to any artist and say, hey, I'd love to see what you could do with X character.
Yeah.
Okay? You know, if you come across an artist that does it and you get their autograph, do it for yourself. Don't do it because you want something to be able to turn around and sell this 10, 20 years from now because it's going to be a completely different world.
This has been the Frugal Nerd with Chris Penna. No.
And get into, for whatever reason you're getting into the comic book, you have a different target of what you're going after.
Yeah, for sure.
If you don't care about the stories and you just want to collect them for the actual...
The profit. The profit the collecting,
and the collecting of it, then you have to go against... You've got to collect completely different product than what a collector for the love of the comic collects a comic for.
Yeah, and I think that's the key thing, and that's a really good breakdown of what the two differences are, I think.
Okay. And on top of that... when the news advertises a comic book,
it's bad
okay,
for us.
It is bad for a collector. Okay. Just because CNN told you that Amazing Spider-Man 700 is a hot issue and you got to go and buy it, doesn't mean that this comic book is going to be worth something. In fact, it's probably meaning the opposite, because the moment this comic book is sold out, they're going to do a second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth printing of it, and suddenly
it's worth nothing
anyway.
It's
worth nothing because there's thousands upon thousands of upon thousands.
Because if you think about it, the company itself doesn't see any cut of these $2 million sales, right?
Okay, do you want to know why a company advertises on the news? Okay, yeah. When Marvel Comics or DC Comics created Amazing Fantasies number 15 and sold it for 15 cents, okay, they made money then.
Yes.
They're not making any money on the resale of it now for the $500,000 it's worth. Okay, so they're advertising these comics on the news, counting on
the average
mob
Joe.
Mentality, yeah. Stupidity of people to go buy these comics in great hoarding fashion, because they make their money now. They don't make their money in 20 years from now.
Right.
On the aftermarket, the only thing that person that benefits on the aftermarket is somebody who's selling to another person or a comic shop.
Exactly.
Those are the only people who are going to benefit 20, 30, 40 years from now when a comic book or collectible is worth money. The comic company or the toy company now only cares about what they sell it for now.
Exactly. And that's sort of an interesting balance. And speaking of selling for now, have we got...
Yes, we have a 9.7 CG whatever graded Joker's Daughter going for a current buy it now of $102.
Is that with the 3D cover?
That is with the 3D cover. Now, there is a 9.9 graded one with a buy it now, a rare CGC 9.9, going for $257.11.
Just so you know, this comic came out 3 weeks ago. Three weeks ago.
If you buy it, you people are stupid. Now, that being said,
yes,
there is a complete set of all 52 3D motion lenticular covers, including the Joker's Daughter, for $411. I may pay that simply because now I don't have to hunt them all down.
Yeah,
that's convenience for me.
Now, it's funny you should bring this up, Mike, because...
I have this in the back.
Because guess what DC Comics is doing, because they know the hype and stupidity of people. Next year, in March, they are re-releasing all the covers again in their original printing format in a collector set that you can only pay $200 for.
With an all-new original 3D cover for it. Because it isn't coming with a brand new...
Yes, and it comes with a special all-new original 3D cover wrapping all of them.
Unless Dan Dido is willing to come and give me... You know what? Never mind.
All I'm saying when it comes to this stuff is...
Buyer beware.
Now, buy the comics because you enjoy the comics. Buy it not because you...
Exactly.
They advertise them on the news, they're not going to be worth anything.
Don't buy something expecting the investment.
You are not putting your kids through college with Spider-Man.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Not
anymore. Now, let me ask you, Chris, as a retailer and as a store owner, what's the coolest thing you've seen walk through your doors to buy, and what is the coolest thing you've sold?
Coolest thing that I've seen walk through my door, and the coolest thing that I personally have sold.
Well, I think Jeff's the coolest thing that's walked through your door.
Oh, thank you.
Well, I would probably say the coolest thing that came through my actual door and was thrust in front of me was I have seen... an Incredible Hulk number one put on my counter.
Oh, wow.
That actually, if I was to guesstimate, would probably be about an 8.7. And the guy wanted to sell it to me, but I just didn't have that sort of coin floating around on me to buy it off.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have grabbed that because the Incredible Hulk is my favorite character. And I would have loved that for just me.
Yeah.
No one can tell that by looking at your Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. The coolest thing I have sold? Let me think.
Your now, soul? Was that a Hulk or a Hulk 181? That was a Hulk number one you sold?
Hulk number one, yeah.
I'm seeing how much it's worth right now.
As Chris cries in the back once he finds out.
Holy crap. Graded with a 7.5, the highest one on eBay.
See, here's the problem with the graded stuff, though. In grading inflates the price past what it really is actually worth.
Right. But okay. what is the graded
one? What is the graded one?
The graded price without Sanley's signature, $20,000. That's really cool. That you had that walk through the door.
Well, that's it's really weird. You can actually order from Diamond, the distribution company for a lot of major comics. You can order graded books. Like, for example, mm-hmm. I think Deadpool, like a Deadpool issue that shipped 2 weeks ago. You can
Deadpool
get,
kills Deadpool.
Deadpool kills Deadpool. You can get the graded version of that. I think it goes for like $100.
It's like
something like that.
Wow, GTFO on that stuff.
I know. I'm like,
now what's the coolest thing you've sold?
Yeah, coolest thing you sold.
It was a giant size X-Men number one.
No. You know what? See, my thing is, I sold most of my high-end comic books when I opened my store to get money to open my store. Which is kind of funny.
What did you sell?
Oh, I had a lot of stuff. I had some original X-Men stuff in my original collection and some original Avengers stuff. Since I've opened my store, the toy market will appreciate this. I actually sold an in-box original Millennium Falcon.
Nice.
From 77?
Yes.
Wow. How much did that go for?
I sold it at the time. I was selling it technically on consignment with somebody, so I didn't make the full amount myself, but it was $2,700.
Jesus. Woo-hoo. That's cool.
Little did they know it was actually the aluminum Falcon.
Oh.
I've sold a lot of things. See, when it comes to the big ticket stuff like that, I mean, me being a small town store, I just don't have the cash to throw around at that sort of stuff to buy it myself. But I sell a lot of cool stuff on consignment. I helped sell an official prop from Hellraiser, the actual cube that was actually signed. A lament configuration signed by Clive Barker. I helped sell for somebody.
Did I know you at this time?
No, this was back when I was in the other store. I helped sell numerous comic books that were worth a couple $100, but nothing like crazy overpriced. Yeah, that's probably it. I mean, the coolest thing I probably got in here at the moment.
Youngblood number one. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. I've got a CGC graded Ultimate Comics number one sketch variant, 1 in 100 sketch variant that I got a $140 price tag on. That's actual CGC graded.
You actually have a collection of Batman Cacophony signed by Walt Flanagan.
Yeah. Yeah. I also have a collection. Unfortunately, aside from you, Mike, no one else can verify the signature.
I was there. Believe me, I suffered.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Your word against theirs. I do have that.
You've got a lot of graded stuff. I noticed a box behind your counter there a couple weeks ago that you got a bunch of graded stuff in. There's a Punisher number one 9.8 that I've had my eye on for a while.
So nobody touch it.
How much is that going for?
I think it's 40. Like 40.
That's not bad.
No, not too bad. I just my weekly stack just doesn't seem to shrink, so I never have a chance to actually get the extra.
Yeah, I actually just paid off my stack last week. Hey, Mike, it'll be $90. Oh, wow.
You had like a month and a half almost.
I can't believe I'm spending that much. That's insane.
Comics, my friend. Comics. She's a harsh mistress.
It's worse than cocaine. Well, I guess not. Not that I know.
The four-color pony.
when it boils down to it, when it comes to the collectibles market, and this is the advice I can give to anybody, if something is only worth
as much as someone's willing to pay for it,
somebody's willing to pay for it. Yeah. Right? So if somebody came in here and said, hey, I got a Walking Dead number one, I want to sell it to you, I would say no. You know, and it has nothing to do with me being able to turn around and sell it in my store or not turn around and sell it in my store. It's just me personally, I would never care to own something, you know, like that.
Yeah. Even on consignment, really?
Well, consignment's a different story. Like I said, if I'm selling your stuff and I'm making a cut out of your money, sure,
that's
I'll do
cool,
that.
Yeah.
It's cool. If you're paying me to put it in my store and do the work of selling it, then sure, yeah, I'll take my cut and be happy about it. But when it all boils down to it, me personally, as a collector myself,
mm-hmm.
I collect comics for the story. I collect comics because I enjoy reading the comics. I enjoy knowing what's going on in the comics. And I've always been that way. I don't collect a comic book going, ooh, tomorrow it's going to be worth $500. And the day after that, maybe $1,000.
Yeah, all right. Well, I guess to wrap this up, what's the comic book you wish you could have that's reasonably in reach for you?
It's hard to tell since I don't know the prices of
Let's say $500 being your upper
limit. Oh, geez, $500? Wow.
$500.
I'd spend $10 and keep the $490.
Yeah.
But I think if there was a So I guess, yeah, if you guys had like a book that you would like to own, like you were saying, like Killing Joke, right? Mm-hmm. Like that was one on your list.
And I mean, it's not necessarily in pristine condition. It's not in terrible shape, but it's clearly been read a couple times, and it's something that means something to me.
Yeah,
I paid $15 for it. I was happy paying that much, you know, whatever.
For sure. I think for me, a lot of stuff that I would like to own is actually trades that are out of print. Mm. There's a lot of stuff that's out of print that I have to collect in single issues.
That's so unfortunate. It's surprising almost that trades do come out of print, because it seems to be such the most easily accessible way to get stories.
Right, and there's so many books. Like I was saying in the Halloween episode, talking about the Spectre, I had to collect those randomly digging through. And those are sort of the issues that, for me personally, and the way I read comics, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for these great stories about, you know, these great stories, and I just want to be able to read them.
Yeah.
And for me, it's collecting is more of a hassle than an enjoyment, because I just want to read the book.
So if you've got can you get me the book? Yeah.
So I guess that would be my short answer. The current top of the list is trying to find the X-Men Sword, which collected the first 5 or 6 issues of the Sword series.
You're really big on Sword, aren't you?
I'm fascinated.
It's like every the last 3 episodes you've been bringing them up. How about you, Chris?
That's my point.
Aside from Incredible Hulk number 1.
Well, like I said, got away. You know, I have so many better things I could do with my money than that. But if I was to pick something that was $500 or less that I wouldn't mind having in my collection just for the sake of nostalgia or whatever.
Yeah.
I would probably go... I wouldn't mind tracking down the Action Comics Annual number 2 that I read, the very first horror /
It's all about the callbacks.
You know, I want something that just brings me back to something in my childhood or whatever, right?
So what was it again, Chris? I'm just curious to see how much it is.
I believe it's...
Mike, you're not going to dash his dreams, are you?
No, I know it's not even worth that much. Yeah. That's the thing.
And I think
Action Comics, what
annual,
was it?
Annual number 2, I think it was, if I remember correctly.
Actually, a funny little thing, too, is one that I have in my collection, I was surprised to find out. I have Punisher Kills the Marvel Universe, and I was one day when we were recording here at the Gauntlet, I happened to look up, and I know Chris has one on the wall, and I happened to see that it had a $40 price tag. So I asked him, I'm like, is that like signed or is there something special? He's like, no, that's just what it goes for.
Does
right
it
now.
Have a picture?
So I'm actually pretty keen on
it. Is this
that.
It, Chris?
Yeah.
That is indeed it.
I may get this for you because it is ridiculously within my range. Although I'm not paying what this guy wants for shipping. He can bite my ass.
We call that the eBay conundrum.
Yeah.
You know, there's like things, but most of the stuff that I would geek out on and be nostalgic about, you know, aren't like crazy over the top comics. Yeah. You know, I'd love to track down like the issue of the Uncanny X-Men that came out the month I was born, you know?
Yeah.
I think that would be just something cool to have.
And
I know that issue
characters.
Is only worth maybe $30.
Yeah.
There's certain things with characters, like obviously, you know, the Detective Comics, the origin of Batman and everything would be great to collect, but considering the price tag, obviously I loves me some Batman, but not that much,
but
thanks.
Yeah,
not enough for
can...
a second mortgage,
yeah, exactly,
you know?
Exactly. Oh,
you know, there's a lot of... See, the thing is, when it comes to the comics, I'm more in love with story arcs than I am with just an individual issue. And story arcs I can just find in graphic novels. And I can throw them on my shelf for, you know, $14 or $20.
And if you're looking for some really classic stuff, DC has their Showcase series, and Marvel's got their Essentials.
Yeah, the Essentials,
and
yep.
They're black and white, but for the size of the books, they're crazy cheap.
Or
and you get some
Marvel Masterworks
and you get
stuff
some classic stories.
Color,
yeah, and exactly.
But,
yeah,
a little bit more expensive,
but you know, you can get some great old stories if you're just looking to read the story and you're not looking to spend a whole lot. That's a good way to get some of those classic stories.
Yeah.
Myself, if I had the money, I would actually. I'm surprised how cheap this is. Actually. Uncanny X-Men 141 and 142. Days of Future Past.
Nice.
I love those covers. That is such a cool storyline.
Actually, one that I just remembered that I wanted. It was my wallpaper on my laptop for the longest time. It's Punisher Batman crossover.
Nice.
But not the one. They've had a couple. There was one that was when Azrael was Batman. Not that one.
Yeah, no.
Like
really,
this one,
really, Jean Paul Valley.
Yeah, no. Because my wallpaper was this classic, like. test of strength kind of thing between Batman and Punisher in the rain, and I'm like, I've never read that. I want to read that. Another Holy Grail would have been Archie Meets the Punisher, but thanks to Mr. McBurney here, he hooked me up with that one.
So I guess that pretty much brings us to the end of this episode. Hope you guys have enjoyed this. Next time on the show, well, I guess by the time this airs, Thor, The Dark World should be in theaters. So we'll have a discussion on that. Post-analysis, how it fits into S.H.I.E.L.D. possibly, and all sorts of fun things. So hopefully you guys will go out and spend your money responsibly at 14 Mill Street in Orangeville, Ontario. Hey,
don't spend it responsibly. Spend it more than more.
Slightly irresponsibly.
go irresponsibly.
Go hog wild. We give you permission.
Yes.
So, yes, stay tuned next week for that. Also, more trivia. And don't forget to answer our previous trivia questions. They are all valid for 1 to 2 weeks. And first come, first serve. So, anyway, guys, until next time, we have been...
Jamie McBurney, and I've gone down to a 9.8, but I'm still feeling okay.
I'm Jeff, the coolest thing that's walked through this door to Han, and you can follow us on Twitter at Gauntlet Podcast.
I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, X-Men number 141.
And I am Chris Peddle, owner and operator of the Gauntlet, and the guy who jacks up the prices.
Ooh.